Falcoholic podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live, now available in audio-only format. Before we get to the show, just want to remind you that you can catch the Falcoholic Live on YouTube at 8:10 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday nights. And if you're interested, we also have a post-game show that goes live right after the games on Sunday or whatever day it happens to be played. So we hope you enjoy this episode, and we hope to see you on YouTube if you're available. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 119 of the Falcoholic Live. I am, of course, your host, Kevin Knight, joined by my co-host this evening, Mr. Eric Robinson. He is on Twitter at @Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good, man. Let's talk some football tonight.
Yeah, let's talk some football. Before we get to the football, guys, I got some exciting news to share about the show. We have a lot of new features coming out. So there's going to be a, as you can see if you're watching live, there is a chat box. You can see your chat on the screen. So that should be something a little interesting there for folks so they can get some interaction going. We have some new interactive things, like when you subscribe to the channel, there'll be a little notification that pops up so we can give you guys some props for subscribing. Also, you can tip us now. So, you know, that's great. So if you're so inclined, the link is in that little middle area there. And that's, of course, always appreciated, totally optional. We had some questions about it. So we wanted to open up the opportunity for those of you that are so inclined. So,
I mean, we do have to talk about a one-win team. So, I mean, the more tips, the better. I mean,
yeah. If it was 0-6, I guess we might have, you know, more of a you know, reasoning here, just to say, you know, oh, we have to talk about this terrible team. But so, you know, they had to go and win, I guess, and they just got us. Just now we got to talk about a win, and it totally threw thrown everything off, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, the Falcons did get that win. It was a good win. It was a fun win. It was decisive, four whole quarters of quality football for once. So that's always nice to see. Yeah. So Eric, I mean, I talked with Auden a little bit immediately after the game, but. What are you feeling? How are your thoughts on that win? Was that a big shock to you, or you were kind of expecting that that game might have actually been a little more favorable to the Falcons than people might have thought?
It was. I wouldn't say a big shock. It was a mild one because I did pick the Vikings to win. As far as my thoughts on the team afterwards, they're still bad. But picking up a win like that, that was – you know, one of the more complete wins that we've seen probably since their Super Bowl run. When I say complete, I mean, you know, you got scoring in every quarter, you know, both sides of the ball were playing well, special teams was playing well, and you literally didn't have that real uneasy factor late in the fourth quarter, like, oh my God, it's happening. You didn't have that. So that was a very complete, and it's, I think it was more surprising that they get a win like that in the first game after Dan Quinn. It wasn't just they went out and beat the Vikings. They beat the Vikings handedly in a complete fashion in the first game post Dan Quinn era. That was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that does, you know, tend to happen sometimes. You know, it's like a weird thing where when teams fire their head coach, they, you know, they tend to play really well the game immediately afterwards for some reason. And, you know, I guess I totally get it from like a psychological level, right? Because it's like a release finally of, oh God, yes, we finally have a chance to move on. This weight has been lifted. Yeah.
Their first game, I think their first game after Bill O'Brien, they beat the Jags, and then they damn near came close to beating the Titans in overtime this past week.
So, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, like, also the thing with the Falcons was, like, yes, they were 0-5, but, like, going into this game, they probably should have been 2-3 if not for some just ridiculous, you know, pretty darn ridiculous like blown leads, you know, which Dan Quinn had kind of become famous for, right? But just Like, they should have been at least 1-4, maybe 2-3. So, like, it's not entirely shocking to me that they were able to, like, win a game. Like, this is not the Jets that we're talking about here.
Yeah. They're bad, but they're not atrocious like the Jets. Like, the Jets just have, I mean, honestly, like, what good can you say about the team? The coaching is bad. The offense is putrid. The defense, you know, even the defensive coordinator is starting to rebel against you know, his cohorts on the sideline. Right? So, I mean, it's just the Falcons are not that.
Right.
But
right.
It was good to see them beat. All right, I still respect the Vikings. I don't care what the record says. They still have I think Zimmer's still a good coach. I still respect that defense because that defense still had – granted, they didn't have Daniil Hunter. But Ngakoue was out there. Eric Kendricks was out there. Anthony Harris and Harrison Smith were still out there. So they still have formidable starters that, you know, posed, you know, somewhat of a threat against the Falcons' offensive unit. So I still respected that team. They were without Dalvin Cook, granted, which is their best player. Kirk Cousins is in the middle of an ugly funk right now that's probably going to cost him his job once the season is over with. But I still respected the Vikings. Look at the Vikings like, okay, this is a team they should run over. You know, I approach this game like, hey, this is going to be a tough one. I mean, when is the last time Atlanta even went into Minnesota and beat them? Fans or no fans? The Vikings have shown during the Mike Zimmer era to have the Falcons' number. So that's why I approach this game like, hey, it's not going to be an easy win. But they look really good, man, from beginning to end.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, this was the first, like, legitimate four quarters performance we've seen from them all season. And, like, we saw this defense look like they could create turnovers and create some havoc. You know, what was it, week two against the Cowboys in the first half? Like, they were playing lights out football, and then they gave up, you know, 40 points. It was, like, it was something ridiculous, like, you know, 30 points in the second half or something. This time, it felt different to me. Like, in that Dallas game, I think I famously tweeted out, like, oh, yeah, they're going to blow this. And, you know, I think, obviously, that's not something you ever want to tweet out. But, like, I could feel it in my heart that they were going to blow that game. Yeah.
Never felt, because I remember in our Falcoholic group chat, we kept saying, like, hey, they're getting these turnovers. They're getting great field position, but they're leaving points on the field. They had to settle for, like, 2 field goals in that first half.
Yeah.
They left like 8 points out there on the field. We kept saying that in the group chat, and it bit them. It came back and bit them.
It did, yeah. So, like, against Minnesota, I actually felt, you know, pretty confident that they were going to pull it off because this, you know, is a team they were playing. It wasn't, like, fluky. I guess, like, against the Cowboys, those 3 crazy fumbles, like, obviously Foye, you know, was a big integral part of that. But, like, it wasn't really like they were playing lights out defense. It was like they were benefiting from a lot of Cowboy mistakes. And
I don't want to say it's fluky,
right? Yeah,
Elliott is fumbling.
Well, yeah, now we know. Yeah, he's having big fumble issues this season. Yeah. But like, it didn't feel like super legitimate. Like they were actually playing great defense, you know. Like some of those interceptions, like Kirk Cousins threw some ducks. Like, let's be clear, but like that Terrell interception was fantastic. Like they were just playing better. The run defense was awesome. They held Madison to 24 yards. Like they were legitimately playing good defense. So that's why I felt a lot more comfortable with just, you know, them actually.
It was plays being made on both sides of the ball that you didn't really expect to see from them. Like you said, I've said it all week in our group chat, that A.J. Terrell interception, that's one of the best interceptions I've seen all year or in a long time, because it wasn't an interception like, okay, he threw it right at him and he's supposed to catch that one. No, he wasn't supposed to get that pick. He came off his guy and his instinct got him that interception. Those are plays that have been missing on this defense for so long. It wasn't turnovers that were like, oh man, you know, they're supposed to make that one. That one was there for them. Like, no, they needed to make those type of plays, those type of interceptions, and that was a great play by A.J. Terrell.
Yeah.
And I felt the second Julio touchdown that came on fourth down, that was the best offensive drive all year. The reason why I said that was the best offensive drive all year, because that was a drive that came that followed Minnesota's first score. So we've seen it all year where an opponent will score. We see Matt Ryan and Julio and Gurley take the field, and we're like, hey, guys, you guys need to answer. And they don't answer.
Right.
That was the drive where they took the field, and we were like, hey, guys, you guys got to answer, please, or we're going to start getting nervous. And they did. And on that fourth down play, that's a play we usually see happen to the Falcons defense.
Yeah.
So to see Matt Ryan and Julio make that play was awesome. And it's chemistry, man. It all boiled down to it. They made the necessary plays that they needed to make that we haven't seen them make in quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. And like that was funny, because that's exactly what I tweeted out about the Terrell pick, was like, oh, this is definitely the type of play that the Falcons are usually on the receiving end of. Yeah. And it's nice for a change, you know, to have that play go the Falcons' way. But it was great. It was fantastic to see them put together those four quarters. And, you know, we talked a lot about the defense, because I think that was by far like the most surprising thing, because as hot and cold as the Vikings have been, I mean, they scored a ton of points against Seattle. They were very competitive in these most recent games. Most of their struggles had kind of come earlier. And Kirk Cousins totally imploded, you know, in the first half with those three picks, and just wasn't really playing good football, which is nice for the Falcons. But, you know, the defense was playing well. The pass rush was, you know, getting some pressure, especially. They were being more aggressive, I think, with blitzing and things like that, too, which helped. But
still only one sack.
Yeah.
Butting a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really sad, because it seems like maybe Tack McKinley is like the linchpin of that pass rush going from like average to good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he just can't stay healthy, which is really sad.
Right.
But,
and that one sack came against a guard, against a backup, a third string guard.
Yeah.
So that was probably the one concerning piece I took from that game. Like, man, they still can't muster a pass rush for anything. Like, this is.
Yeah. Not great. Not great.
Not great at all.
Yeah. But, you know, at least the coverage was better. And, you know, Grady Jarrett's still awesome. But to me, like, I wrote an article about it that came out today. But, you know, Foyaloku being one of the best players in this defense, I did not see that coming. That was not something I really anticipated. I mean, I thought he would be solid next to Deion Jones. But, I mean, he's arguably outplayed Deion to this point in the season.
Yeah. Yeah. And we read it all week that. And we haven't done it yet, but we should. Big, big credit to Raheem Morris. We read all week about how his approach to everything was way different from Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. He held players accountable. We're not talking about backups. He held starters accountable.
Right.
Which is probably something that Dan Quinn didn't do. And you can see it on the field against Minnesota. I mean, we'll continue to look as weeks go to see if it resonates, you know, from here on out. But you saw it on the field against Minnesota. You saw Deion Jones. And Deion Jones looked like a completely different player this past Sunday than he did in any other game this year. He looked like a guy that got called out in a meeting and was embarrassed. And he said, all right, you know what? That's not going to happen again.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw that. He looked like that. You know, you saw it from Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan looked like a quarterback that's like, and granted, Matt has played great all year in my opinion. But even he looked like, all right, you know what? Raheem Morris called me out this week. I'm not going to take that no more. T.I. called me out this week, so I'm going to shut him up too. So you felt like this team got, you know, Raheem Morris got into their behinds on the practice field last week, and they showed him.
Yeah.
So against Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they did play more aggressive football on defense in particular. And I think that is, you know, Morris's influence. We know Quinn is very conservative with his coverage, is very soft in his zone. And that's all well and good if you're getting, you know, tremendous pass rush every play, but, we're not. So, and I think Morris is more willing to use creative blitzes than Dan Quinn has been. And you know, it all kind of came together this week, and we'll see if it's something that can be replicated. You know, if Kirk Cousins doesn't shoot himself in the foot three times, you know, is this game a lot closer? Maybe. But with them actually being good, to like, if they can just be like below average on defense, this team can win games. Like if they're 32 teams, they're not winning football games. If they're like 25 out of 32, this offense is good enough to win some games, particularly against defenses like Minnesota's that Dirk Cutter's offense can just outclass in terms of talent. Like, that's when this offense is, like, this offense is going to look this good against inferior defenses. But where you have issues is, you know, better
they
than
that. 25th overall, but if they're top 12 in takeaways or top 10 in takeaways, mm-hmm. it's going to mask it. Trust me.
Yeah.
We saw it in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean that, yeah, 2016, 2012 was another season where they just had a lot of turnovers and it masked a defense that was, you know, not great overall. But you know, it was serviceable. It was enough for this team to get to 13-3 in 2012 and 11-5 in 2016, and they were capable of like turning it on and putting in some good performances when they needed to. And you know, that's the 2016 playoffs come to mind for that. Like, they were totally lights out until the Super Bowl, and even honestly through most of the Super Bowl, it just ended up being too many plays and Dan Quinn being a little too conservative with the defensive calls and too much prevent and all that. But we won't relitigate that tonight. I know we're not getting, you know, new subscribers if we start going down the 28-3 loophole or rabbit hole. But yeah, all right. We got some folks, some questions I want to get to real quick. Let's see. So ViralGraph56 asks, if we play well the rest of the season, would we consider keeping Raheem Morris as our head coach? So I assume you mean like play like really well, like nine, you know, win, you know, 9 games or 10 games, have a winning season, be competitive, like a really miraculous turnaround. Because I honestly think that's the only way he's really in consideration, and even then it might not be enough. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, say Raheem Morris pulls off, you know, a miracle and we win 9 or 10 games. Would you probably make the playoffs with the 7th spot, I would think.
He damn sure would be a finalist, at least. I don't think Blank is going to give him the job, but he would definitely be in the conversation if he does. I think a lot of small things can go along the way for Raheem Morris that can help him on next year, on next year's staff, if he's able to be held over. I mean, we saw what the defense looked like this past weekend. I'm pretty sure whoever the next head coach is, whoever the next GM is, I'm pretty sure they saw that game. And if they can replicate that a few times throughout the season, there's a good chance that he may not be in for the head coaching job, but they may say, you know what, we want to bring you back as the DC. Mm-hmm. We want to keep you on as a defensive assistant coach. You never know.
Yeah.
But if he coaches really, really good and he gets him above 500, I'm not going to say he's going to be the coach, but he's going to be a real prime candidate. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree. Like, if he does, you know, turn this around in a big way, he'll be considered. I think it's honestly more of an audition for other teams, because I think the Falcons will kind of be chasing these, like, really high-end coaching candidates. They're probably, I assume that they've learned their lesson and they want an offensive coach, but I guess maybe we shouldn't assume that, but I hope that they've assumed that. But yeah, I mean, if Raheem Morris has a great season and this team does make the playoffs, and especially if they like win a playoff game or something, then yeah, I mean, I think you have to consider that he has made the necessary changes. And like, I know, you know, folks have mentioned that, like, Raheem Morris was the defensive coordinator under Dan Quinn. Like, yes, obviously he was responsible in some way for that, but if Quinn's the head honcho and he says this is what we're doing and all this, like, that's what they're doing. Like, it's not Raheem Morris's place to say we're not going to play soft zone because that's what Quinn wants. Like, now that he's the head coach, he has the kind of liberty to just say whatever he wants. And it seems like the biggest change is probably not going to be scheme. And honestly, the scheme was pretty much the same against Minnesota. I mean, it was a little bit more aggressive and there was, you know, tighter coverage and less soft zone and that sort of thing. Not major, but those were nice to see. But it's like, it seems like Morris is being more aggressive with the players as well, like getting in their face. You know, it was, you know, heard that he kind of went after the team leaders, called them out for, you know, not necessarily.
It's not going to be the scheme is where you're going to see the results from Raheem Morris. It's the execution of the scheme is where you may see his fingerprints. You know, and we saw it this past week. I mean, literally. But I'm quite honestly, what are the odds that Deion Jones would have got the interception in the first period of the game if Dan Quinn was inside?
Right.
I don't know. That's the thing. At least with Raheem Morris in play, we saw this past week, he can get, you know, he can light a fire in them, and they may play different. So that's where you'll see it.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm excited to see, you know, what they do going forward, too, because it's, you know, it's one thing to play really well after you finally get, you know, your beleaguered head coach out of here and, you know, everyone's kind of exhaling and you're going up against a 1-4 team. You know, what do you do going forward? Because it's been difficult to sustain for these coaches, you know, these interim head coaches to sustain success. There's usually a like we talked about this a little bit earlier, like there's usually a burst of quality play and then, you know, it kind of goes back to being bad because generally the team is, you know, not so good. And thank you, Arshit Shaula, for testing out our subscriber button. It works. So thank you for testing that out, and thank you for subscribing. So that's what it looks like, folks, if you subscribe. So everybody should subscribe so I can give you a nice shout out and I can look at that button. It looks really good in my opinion. You guys, obviously, it's about whether you guys like it. You know, that's the real thing. But yeah, like I was saying, like, it's about can they maintain it? And that's a lot harder to do than just winning one game. Like, we're still 1-5. Like, let's make that clear, right? We're still 1-5. This is still not great. So we'll see what happens with that. But let's shift gears a little bit to the offense because the defense was the big surprise, but the offense played extremely well. Obviously, they had 40 points. And one of the big things about the offense in this game was that they kept scoring. Like, every quarter, they kept piling on points. And they never... The Vikings rallied pretty hard in the second half. You know, they managed to put up 23 points. But, like, the Falcons kept scoring, so it really... the game was never in doubt. Like, it was never in contention. The Falcons continued to score. I thought that... You know, I don't know if Morris had some influence on this or not, but the team was more balanced in the second half as opposed to, you know, oscillating between... four runs and four passes and like just going three and out a bunch like in the Bears game. Thank you, T-Main 87. Thank you, man, for subscribing. We appreciate that, brother. But I thought it was a very balanced game plan in the second half, which was nice to see. Like, I think I pointed out on Twitter that, you know, this team burned more clock in literally one fourth quarter drive against the Vikings than they did in three against the Bears in week three. Like, that's crazy to me. Fady and also Sean Carter, thank you guys for subscribing too. We appreciate that, guys. I assume Morris had something to do with that, right? That he was involved in some way and kind of helping Cutter craft a more balanced game plan. But what were some of your takeaways from the offense in this game?
For one, time of possession was, like you just mentioned, was beautiful. 40 minutes compared to 19 minutes and 53 seconds exactly for Minnesota. Falcons held the ball for 40 minutes that game. That's beautiful. I don't care how much numbers they put up. I don't care if they put up 800 yards. I don't care. The things that I look for out of a really good offense, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about Kansas City or Seattle, is are they able to score when their defense needs them to score?
Mm-hmm.
Can they put together a drive that can close the door on a team? Those are the things I look for, and the Falcons were able to do that this past week. Yeah, they put up great numbers. I get that. But like I mentioned, that third-quarter touchdown, late third-quarter touchdown, to put them up 30-7 going into the fourth quarter, to me, that was the best drive of the year because they answered. They answered a Viking score, and they ate some clock. Fourth down, they were still aggressive. And, you know, you got another Matt Ryan and Julio Testament. And like you said, late in the fourth, they were still able to put together, you know, Minnesota's only down two scores at one point, I believe. They were only down like two scores, and they needed the ball back. Atlanta wouldn't give it back to them. Mm-hmm. That's what I love to see.
Yeah.
So those, you know, Matt Ryan had 371 and four touchdowns. We've seen that hundreds of times. But those were the takeaways for me. The time of possession, I think they had like 80, maybe close to 80 plays.
Mm-hmm.
Again, beautiful. That's a lot of plays for defense.
Yeah.
Those were the numbers that stood out to me the most.
Yeah, I agree. The running game wasn't like amazing. It wasn't like as good as it was last week. You know, they were dominant last week, and they just didn't lean on it. But I guess it was 2 weeks ago with the Panthers game. But like the Vikings were a solid run defense going into this game. But
right.
Yeah,
right.
Whereas the Panthers were like one of the worst in the league. So
this felt more like I know some fans may not like this, but this felt more like a Kyle Shanahan approach. Whereas we know your weakness and we're going to attack your weakness. And if you're not going to be able to stop it, it's going to be a long day for you. Coming into this game, going into the Panthers game, the biggest weakness on that defense was a mediocre run defense, which is why you saw them post like 160 rushing yards. During the season. But going into this game, the Vikings have one of the worst passing defenses in the league. I pointed out in the preview, I think they had like 9 or 10 players that gave up a quarterback rating of 103 or more when targeted this season. So that means you got to beat them in the air, and that's what they did. So for the first time, I'm going to tip my cap a little bit, Dirk Koetter. Like, okay, you saw a weakness and you exploited it. That's what I like to see.
Yeah. And I'm totally into that, you know. And this was a better called game from Dirk Koetter. I just, like I said, we need to see it against quality defenses, because that's been where Dirk Koetter has struggled, not against the ones that have been, you know, poor. I mean, the Panthers, bad run defense, good pass defense. And we saw that. Like, the pass game was suffocated against Carolina, even though the run game was getting it going. And, you know, against the Bears, you know, they started out hot and then they kind of cooled off and they couldn't really get anything going either. So, like, it needs to be demonstrated consistently, and it needs to be demonstrated against teams that we just don't completely outclass, because that was what happened this time. Like, on offense, the Falcons totally outclassed the Vikings on offense against their defense, and it's hard, you know, to look bad in that scenario. Now, it can happen, but, like, Dirk Koetter's scheme works really well when you just straight up are better than your competition, and we saw that on Sunday. So was it perfect? No, but I think it was encouraging, you know, for Koetter. The balance was certainly something that I was happy to see. And the passing game was electric. I mean, the big thing for me was Julio Jones looks healthy again. And this offense is just different with him healthy. Like, it was clear over the past two games, you know, he sat out, last time, but this week he actually looked healthy. He and Matt Ryan have such a strong connection. You know, they just were kind of, they looked like they were just having fun. Like, they were playing loose again. Like, it just seemed like the offense was wound up so tight over the past few weeks. And to see them actually go out there and have a good game and just, you know, that fourth down touchdown play, that was just a schoolyard play. Like, Matt Ryan was like, I'm going to run for it. Oh, crap, there's two guys here. I'm just going to have to toss it. And, you know, Julio was in the perfect place and just, you know, made a great play.
That's 10 years of playing together right there. That's chemistry. That's all it was. They gave each other eye contact, and that's where it paid off right there.
Yeah, and it was, you know, that's what they're capable of, that duo, and that's why it's fun to watch so much when Julio's here and healthy.
This is probably the one game all year also on offense where I wasn't actually able to predict the calls. I think it was the Bears game where we were just like, no, the Packers game. That's the one where we're like, okay, we know what they're going to do. Like, it's just, but this particular approach against the Vikings, like, it was kind of sort of hard to predict what they're going to run. And that's another thing that I like. Don't make it so easy for them. If two guys like Kevin and Eric can pick out, like, okay, is what they're going to run on second down. Boom. I'm pretty sure NFL defenses are like, this is what they're going to run on second down. So he kept the Minnesota defense guessing a lot for four quarters.
Yeah.
And again, that's what I like.
Yeah.
Not to mention, there was some ugly miscommunication on the back end in the secondary.
Yeah, a few times.
And he took advantage of it again. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell. Yeah. That first Julio touchdown was that way. Mm-hmm. They tried to double Julio. But I believe it was Dantzler who didn't give him inside. Was it Was it Dantzler or was it Gladden? One of the two.
They both got burned. Let's be honest.
One of the two. He was supposed to give him inside release because he had Harrison safety. He had Harrison Smith coming over the top of him. So that, and they were gonna play. You know, they were double covering him at that point. But because of the way he was lined up, he ended up cutting off Smith, who was trying to come over the top of mm-hmm. Julio, which left Julio open.
Yeah.
So again,
yeah.
a lot of miscommunication on the back end. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, to the Falcons' credit, they took advantage of it, and they have the weapons to do that consistently, and they really should be doing that more often. But the scheme just doesn't really help them, so if they don't just create separation on their own, it could be difficult. But against Jeff Gladney and Cam Dantzler, and you know, it's really kind of shocking to me that Anthony Harris and, you know, Harrison Smith aren't playing better, but they can't. There's only so much they can do to cover up right. those corners. You know, like
right.
people want to make it seem like if you have two great safeties, they cover up your corner problems. And it's like they can to an extent, but you know
they're
that
a damn good safety tent.
They are. They're one of the best. And that's part of the reason why it was so surprising that the Vikings defense has kind of fallen off a cliff this year, because they kept, you know, the safeties intact. They got rid of, you know, Xavier Rhodes, who they thought was overrated, who's having a pretty strong season, funny enough. But you know, they just tried to go young at the position, and Gladney was someone I liked, but it's like, you know, it's the same thing with AJ Terrell. Like, depending on that rookie corner to be the linchpin of your secondary is not generally a good idea. And it seems like maybe that'll work out okay with the Falcons. Like, I think Terrell has been as good as we probably could have hoped at this point. But
and I like Dantzler a lot too, but Dantzler played primarily, he was pretty much an off coverage corner at Mississippi State, playing a lot of zone, playing a lot of cover two. Now you're talking about him just manning up in this Minnesota scheme, so that's a speed bump he has to deal with as well. So
yeah. All right, Abixis brother, like, you gotta, like, if you're gonna troll with a statement like Isaiah Oliver's better than Grady Jarrett, like, that's very low effort trolling. Okay, I'm gonna need you to like put in a little more effort than that, okay?
Unbelievable.
A little more effort. All right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
better.
You got to do better than that. Yeah. Hayden Hurst is the best tight end in the NFL, better than Kelsey. Yeah. Let's not. You know. Again, like, you got to tone that take down a little bit. You know, so that we can even. There's nothing to discuss with that take. You know, it's ridiculous on its face. All right. Viral Graph 56 again asks, are the Falcons an attractive opening for a coach?
Yes.
Yes. They are. They're very attractive. I mean, I think there's a lot to. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think we need to address.
We do. We do.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about here. Yeah. They are. They're an attractive team, because if you're a particular head coach or a GM, I think you can look at what they have on the roster right now and you can say, hey, I can win right now. I can win with Matt Ryan. I can win with Julio Jones. I can win with Calvin Ridley. I can win with Grady Jarrett. I can win with Deion Jones. I just need to tweak the roster here and there, mm-hmm. and we could be a 10-win playoff team next year, 11-win playoff team next year. So I think, yes, this can be an attractive spot. Is it one where you can build for the future? Not necessarily, but you'll be hard-pressed to tell me that this team is not more of a win-now team compared to Houston, compared to the Jets. That's probably going to open up at the end of the year. This is probably the most win now, we're ready type team for a coach to come in and do so.
Yeah.
So yes, it is an attractive.
Yeah, and especially if like Matt Ryan plays more like this week as opposed to the previous 2 weeks, because, you know, and Abix is trying a better troll attempt here, saying Matt Ryan's top five QB. I mean, statistically, he is this year. You know, he's second in the league in passing. That doesn't necessarily mean you're a great quarterback, but like, he needs to be more consistent, particularly this year, because it's been a little hot and cold, and a lot of that has to do with Cutter. But like, if he can play really well over the remainder of the season and then look great, you know, that just helps matters, because then you're not in a situation where you have to get a rookie quarterback in here and start him immediately. You know, this is a guy that Matt Ryan gives you the option to try to win now, and he also gives you the option to draft a quarterback and, you know, try to let him learn behind Ryan for a year or two. You know, we talked about that in previous weeks. Obviously, if the Falcons start winning a bunch of games, for the record, I still don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, they could win 5-6 games, I think, still. So, like, you're probably not in contention for Trevor Lawrence at that point, but that could be the perfect spot for like a Trey Lance or Justin Fields or one of these other guys that's, you know, going to be getting, there's always new guys that get help. So they get, you know, hype. But yeah, I mean, from a roster standpoint, I think the Falcons are overall a better roster than the Texans. Texans have probably more. I mean, honestly, you think Texans, you think defense, but like they really don't have many pieces. Like it's J.J. Watt, who's aging and often injured, but still good.
They got use.
Yeah, they have some young guys there. Those linebackers are slow as molasses, though. My God, like it's like they built that linebacker core for the '90s. It's pretty crazy to me. And I like Zach Cunningham, and Bernardrick McKinney was someone I liked as like a 3-4 inside guy, but like all that big money tied up in two linebackers who can't cover, man, that's just not great to me. But you know that they have pieces on the D line, they have pieces at linebacker. The secondary is a giant disaster. But on offense, you know, they have some talent too. Obviously, they got Laremy Tunsil and things like that, and the rest of that offensive line is, you know, pretty meh. But you got Watson. That's the one thing I think that is the one thing that the Texans have is Watson. So you've got your franchise quarterback locked up, you know, for the foreseeable future. That's the one thing that they have. And it just depends on what a head coach wants. Do they want to not have to worry about quarterback for 10 years, or do they want a chance to draft a quarterback and right. win with, you know, you kind of get the best of both worlds with the Falcons, in my opinion. Like you can get your young quarterback and you can try to win now. Falcons obviously have a much better draft capital situation as opposed to the Texans, but salary cap wise, it's pretty grim for the Falcons. It's not quite as grim for the Texans, but it's not good. So, I personally, with the fact that we are getting fans in the stadiums for however long that lasts, probably not very long, but like, I don't think we're going to get this nightmare cap scenario of, like, $175 million. I just don't think the NFL is going to let that happen, personally. So
you're supposed to lower next year, isn't it?
Well, that's the floor is $175 million. That's the lowest it could theoretically go. I just don't see them allowing that to happen because you're going to get some teams with, like, $80 million in dead cap if that happens. You know, the Eagles, the Saints. Like, you're in a position where it's like you almost can't field a roster with that far of a dead cap. So like they're going to have to do something about that. I think at the end of the day, we're going to be looking at a cap that's the same as this season. Like it's going to be a flat cap and they're going to make concessions next year. But
how much was it this year?
Like 198, I think. Something like that. So like if it's that, like if the cap stays the same, the Falcons are only like a few million over. So it's not at anywhere near as big of a deal. They can easily clear space.
Well, there's already a couple teams that's facing like an unprecedented amount of, you know, below cap space.
Oh yeah,
like, the Saints is one of them.
And yeah, the Eagles, yeah, those are the two worst ones by far. I think the Eagles are like $80 million over, and the Saints are like $60 million, assuming that nightmare scenario. And even if they get back to what the cap was this year, which I think is probably the best case scenario, they're still over by, you know, $60 million or so for the Eagles and $40 million or so for the Saints. So like either way, they're going to be in drastic issues cap wise, but like, you know, they asked for that.
Right.
So
that's what happens when you kick the can down the road too long, which is what they've been doing. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Iron Rain. I told Eric that you guys love his water drinking habits. Eric knows how to stay hydrated, man. He's an example to us all. So, you know, that's one thing that I can always depend on.
A gallon a day, man.
Yep.
A gallon a day. Gotta do it.
Yeah. But yeah, we can squeeze in some more roster and other talk before we get to that, guys. Do want to remind you to like the video as well. I know we had some new folks subscribe. We appreciate that. If you like the video, that helps other people on YouTube find it. We really appreciate that. And like I said, if you hit that subscribe button, you'll get a nice shout out from us and you can test out my nice widget. And if anyone is feeling generous, I want to make sure that I don't know if I have this displayed right, but there is not an actual box that you click. It's not like Twitch. I can't get it to like actually show up on the screen. That would be really cool. But there is a link that's going to show up in this little middle area. Hold on. It's like, wait, there. So you see where it says enjoying the show and all that? Yeah. There's a link there. It's streamlabs.com/thefalcoholic. If you are interested in tipping and you want to test out the system for me, both things, which I really appreciate, that is where you go. I believe it's right now set up to do PayPal only. I'm in the process of getting it to do direct credit card, which means you don't have to sign into PayPal and do all that BS, because I don't like PayPal any more than you do, trust me. But That's where you go if you are interested. So I just want to make sure that was clear, because it's not as nicely integrated as Twitch. That's one advantage Twitch still has. But thank you guys again, no matter what. We appreciate you. All right. So, yeah, I know folks wanted to talk. Also, if you donate, I do want to remember this. You can put a message with your donation. So if you have a really burning question you want us to get, that'll make sure we answer it. We're still going to try to answer as many as we can, but as you can see, there's a million questions coming in. So that is one way to make sure your question gets answered. So, yeah, you're welcome, Viral. You're welcome, man. Thanks for tuning in. So, yeah, I know. Okay, Cody Stokes. What is our opinion of Dante Fowler's play so far? Not great. It was better this week. He was basically invisible before this week, but not great. You know, he was instrumental on that like kind of goal line stand. There were definitely some intriguing signs based on what we've known. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not $16 million worth. That's for sure. I think it's like 1.5 or 1. Yeah. So it's not like the worst signing of all time. It's not Ray Edwards yet, but it's not great. So, I mean, yeah. How do you feel about that signing so far?
Yeah, it hasn't met the expectations that I thought it would. You know, I didn't expect him to come in here and be Von Miller.
Right.
But, you know, I did expect him to have more than one sack after 6 games.
Yeah.
Part of it is because, you know, the tack injury takes all the, you know, it puts all the attention on him. He's game plan a little bit more, but, you know, we definitely need to see some more out of him going forward, because that pass rush, as we mentioned, that pass rush has been an issue for a very long time in Atlanta. And again, playing the Vikings this past week, for them to only get one sack, and that for that one sack to come against a third string guard, like, just like, come on, man, we got to see something better than that. Grady Jarrett is doing everything he can,
everything possible.
He would be a lot better if someone can compliment him. We don't need to steal curtain, but somebody has to compliment him on the outside. Mm-hmm. So, and that somebody probably needs to be Dante Fowler.
Probably, yeah. So, also joining us now, former Falcons guard Keenan Forney. He's on Twitter at @kforney65. Keenan, how are you doing tonight, man?
Good. What's up, y'all? What's up? I heard y'all talking about our high-paid free agent acquisition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting the job done, I guess, so to speak, as much as we would like.
Yes. Yeah. You got any takes on the Dante Fowler situation thus far?
Man, yeah, you got paid all that money, man. You got to come produce, dog.
Right.
I mean, yeah, like, we don't need Von Miller numbers, but one sack after 6 games, like, come on, man.
Yeah, right. You got to come with it better than that, man. Yeah. I mean, and you was right. You know, probably the tack injury is probably hurting them a little bit, but at the same time, bro, when they pay you that money, man, they don't want to hear that shit. I mean,
You're right. They don't want to hear that. They didn't pay you that money thinking that tack was going to get injured. They pay you that money.
We're going to give you this money because we're going to team you up with our other guy over there. And, you know, hopefully you'll get a lot of sack. They paid you based on what you did last year, you know, as an individual. You know, I know you play with some other great people, but, you know, he's got to, you know, you got to do more, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yep, you got to do better. Yeah, that's kind of where we are. I know, guys, we're going to have Mike Payton from SB Nation site Pride of Detroit joining us here soon to preview the Lions game. But before we get to that, Keenan, I wanted to get your thoughts on that first win of the season. How was that for you?
Woo!
Yeah.
Oh man, hey, we ain't gonna be the Detroit Lions. What year was that when they went 0-16?
Yeah, we're safe there. So yeah.
Yeah, we ain't gonna be the Cleveland Browns in the Hugh Jackson era. I mean, hey, so. We got us a dub. I'll take it, baby. Let's enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like an actual four-quarter performance, too, which was nice to see.
Hey, am I the only one when you was watching all first half, third quarter, fourth quarter, you just kind of sitting there like, all right, come on now.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't no, hey, we got this in the bag type of mess. It, oh, man, you, come on now, you, y'all. You still
felt that way a little bit, like, yeah, all right. Minnesota scored. All right, so it's about to start. But like I mentioned earlier in the show, the drive that they had after the Minnesota score, with the Julio touchdown on fourth down.
Yeah.
That was one of the best. That's probably their best drive all year because they needed the answer and they did. And that was the type of play that we've seen happen against the Falcons so many times before. So that was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just nice to see. Nice to see all around. Hey, Mike, I can see that you joined us. How are you doing, man?
Good. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Yeah, we're just wrapping up our talk on the Falcons getting that first win of the season, which is a big weight off our shoulders. We unfortunately just had mentioned, you know, the Lions' unfortunate record of 0-16 that one season. So we don't have to worry about that this year at least. So
yeah, you got to try real hard to be that bad.
Yeah, I wasn't that concerned, but it's nice to make sure that that option is off the table going forward. But
right.
Yeah, he is Mike Payton, guys. He is at Pride of Detroit, SB Nation's Lions site. I believe I still have your handle right in here. It's POD underscore Payton, right?
Yep, that's right.
Perfect. Yeah, so obviously, you know, maybe not quote-unquote big NFC matchup this weekend, but I think the Lions, you know, were kind of a punching bag preseason. You know, people were like, oh, the Lions, you know, they're not going to be that great. But they've been, I think, solid. Obviously, they've been better than the Falcons. So what's your take right now on where the Lions are at going into Week 7?
It's, you know, it's a really interesting time in Detroit right now. There was a good chance that if the Lions didn't beat the Jaguars last Sunday that Matt Patricia was probably going to get fired. That was the rumor going around. Jason LaCanfora started that rumor. So, you know, take that with a bit of a grain of salt.
Right. There's a lot of rumors.
Yeah. So, there, you know, right now it's everything's sort of in limbo. We didn't expect them to beat the Jaguars. I certainly didn't. I picked the Jaguars to win that game. They're going into a game this Sunday with the Atlanta Falcons, who's got a much, much tougher offense, as it would appear, at least on paper. So, you know, right now, I don't know. Everything's in limbo. I feel like if the Lions lose the next two games, then they're probably going to be looking for a new GM and a new head coach immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it was kind of a duel between Dan Quinn and Matt Patricia in the, like, head coach who's most likely to be fired rankings early this year. And it looks like the Lions kind of were able to turn it around to prevent that from happening. The Falcons were unfortunate in doing that last year. Is that a change that you want to see? I know Falcons fans were like just itching to get Quinn out of here, but what's your kind of opinion on Matt Patricia's tenure?
Well, you know, it's hard because, you know, as a writer, I try to be, I try to be a little bipartisan about it, I suppose. You know, I don't think that it's going to work out. Matt Patricia has shown that he's quite the narcissist and, he wants to put in, you know, his scheme, and he's gonna basically ride it until the wheels fall off, and it's not working. They changed things up a little bit last week. They said they were gonna simplify things, so they stopped playing man coverage so much. They finally got after the passer. They got the pass rush going. They played a lot more zone. So it appears that maybe he's listening. But you know, so as a fan though, the other side of it is like, I don't want to go through another change. It's it's exhausting. You know.
Yeah.
The amount of times that you go through a new GM, new head coach, you know, you felt like you had things right with Jim Caldwell. Matt Patricia was supposed to just be that next move to get the Lions to the, you know, the next step. This was supposed to be the move that was supposed to be, you know, the Lions were competitive under Caldwell. Patricia was supposed to be the guy that was going to lead him to championships. It's clearly not happening. Things are much, much worse. And, you know, Matt Patricia is probably one of the worst coaches in Lions history at this point. It's not going well.
Yeah, yeah.
And ironically, he threw the Jim Caldwell regime under the bus once he.
Absolutely. Yeah. Funny enough, you know, the Falcons, I think, chose Mike Smith over Jim Caldwell, if I remember correctly, or it was something like that. So, you know, these two teams are kind of strangely linked together in some ways, at least in suffering, for sure. But before we get to more, someone did do us the favor of testing out that donation tip system. Michael Zurich donated $1. Thank you so much, Michael Zurich, for testing that out for us. Michael says, Matt Ryan is the best QB in the league. Kevin Knight is the Matt Ryan of Falcons journalists. So, wow. Also trade Ricardo Allen. So, okay. thank you, Michael, for testing that out for us. We really appreciate that, man. And of course, the financial contribution.
All the hot takes out there.
Yeah, you can use it. I'll read your hot take on the air. I'm not above that. So, but yeah, I do want to open the floor for you guys if anybody else has questions for Mike about the Lions.
Yeah. So first question for me, you know, bringing in a guy like Adrian Peterson, you know, he has been, you know, Adrian Peterson, the name speaks for itself.
Right.
But I want your opinion as far as how his fit has been this year with that Lions offense. Does it actually help them? Does it hinder that offense? Because they're relatively young around him. So what does his presence do for their scheme going forward?
I think that you know, the biggest thing that Adrian Peterson brings to the table is that he's Adrian Peterson. And he's got a lot of, like as you mentioned, he's got a lot of young running backs around him. So have that presence in the room, have somebody who, you know, is a former NFL MVP, knows how the game should be played. It's nice to have that guy around as a leader, as a locker room leader. In terms of his on the field work, it seems to be shrinking as the weeks go on. DeAndre Swift had a big, big game last week. And I would imagine that they're going to start going in the direction of having DeAndre take most of the carries. And Adrian's going to be more of your third down back, like what we all assumed that he would be when he got brought in. He fits in perfectly with what the Lions are doing in terms of just trying to grow that running back room. So, I mean, he's nice to have around, but I'm not expecting him to hit 1,000 yards or anything like that or do anything special this year.
Right. Biggest concern on defense for you going into this matchup?
Yeah, it's the linebackers. It's always been the linebackers. You know, I have a feeling that Matt Ryan's going to be able to exploit these guys over the middle. It's been a problem they've had for a long time. Their linebackers can't cover at all. Jelani Tavai is proving to be a big time draft bust, big time second round draft bust. Jared Davis he's a great pass rusher, but he can't cover to save his life. They're starting to try a new idea with him to maybe just make him just a pass rusher coming off the edge. Other than that, Jamie Collins is okay. He's reliable in a way, but he's getting older as well. So I think the linebacking, is a real issue. I think if they're able to pass, if they continue to rush the passer, they can do it. Their corners are improving each week. Jeff Okuda had a good week last week. He's getting better. But, yeah, the linebackers is an issue.
Yeah. Jeff Okuda's early struggles were really surprising to me because he was such, like, a can't-miss prospect. And, obviously, it was super early to really be that concerned about anything, you know, and it's hard to look good on a bad defense. We've been having these conversations here in Atlanta as well. But is, you know, Okuda starting to come along a little bit now?
Yeah, he had a pretty good week against the Jaguars last week. I think he graded out about 62.7. from Pro Football Focus. His early days were not so great. I mean, you know, your first start ever comes against Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. That's real tough, man. That's, you know, one of the best quarterbacks of all time and a receiver who's probably one of the better ones in the league. And then you had to take on Drew Brees the next week. You know, so he was definitely getting exploited. He was getting targeted quite a bit. He did get a pick and a nice tackle for loss against the Saints. And he had a pretty good week against the Jaguars. He got burnt in coverage on the first play of the game. I worry a lot how he's going to – I would imagine they're going to put him on Calvin Ridley because Desmond Trufant is still hurt. So you got to put Aurarie on Julio, I would imagine. So I'm a little nervous as to what Calvin Ridley is going to do to him. But I guess we're going to see.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I know we had a question about Trufant from Jason Gaines. Obviously, he's injured now. How was Trufant doing with the Lions prior to that injury?
You know, he really only played week one. He was okay. You know, you could see a guy that's kind of aging and he's not really playing his best ball anymore. I think that maybe, you know, his last good year was last year now he's just dealing with a hamstring injury that just will not get better. So, you know, obviously Trufant's only on a one-year deal. I don't see this relationship going any farther after this.
Yeah, that's unfortunate to hear, you know, because he was a big fan favorite. Well, I thought he was a fan favorite. I liked him a lot on a personal level and as a player, but fans had kind of soured on him over the last few years, and it was clear that he was no longer like a corner one or anything like that. But yeah, injuries just at the most inopportune times were kind of his MO. Like, you know, I think we all believe that if he hadn't missed the end of that 2016 season, this team would have definitely won the Super Bowl. So,
Didn't he have like four picks before he got hurt?
Yeah, he was having a great year last year too before he got hurt. It just seems like those injuries are starting to catch up with him a bit. Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, you bring this guy in to replace Darius Slay. He's, you know, there's just no way for him to look good. I mean, you're trying to replace one of the best corners in the league. It's hard work, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
They should probably get rid of Matt Patricia just on letting that happen alone.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I don't really. It seemed like it was just a relationship issue, not necessarily like a cap or anything else, right?
Well, so I mean, I feel I need to really get into this. I really need to elaborate on this. So
yeah,
basically,
go ahead.
You know, Jim Caldwell came to town, and he formed a really, really great culture within the Lions organization. This was a team that was. The players are happy. They're ready to win a championship, and everything, you know, is going smoothly. Now, Matt Patricia came in and treated it like a rebuild. He treated it like there wasn't a team that just went 9-7. So he tore everything out. He tore out the culture. He started overrunning the guys and it's overworking them and just making everything not fun. That's the reason that Richard Sherman didn't sign with the Lions when he, you know, was about to sign with the Lions. He realized, hey, I'm not going to have any fun here, so I'm not going to go. And that's the reason. That's one of the reasons Darius Slay is gone, is because he and Matt Patricia could not get along. Matt Patricia was telling Darius that he wasn't elite, and you know that he wasn't one of the best corners in the league, which is just patently false. Wow. And yeah, so Darius
one of
lost
the top 100 players for a while, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Darius lost respect for him, and he wanted out. Simple as that. I mean, that's what Matt Patricia has done to the locker room.
I've heard this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard that a lot of the players have kind of soured on Matt Patricia because they're kind of wondering, like, is this you or is this Bill Belichick? You know, like, who are you trying to be? You know?
Yeah.
He's come in and, like you said, gutted the whole team pretty much and talked crazy to Darius Slay. So, you know, if he talked crazy to one of his better players – how's he talking to the ones that are kind of middle of the road, maybe a little bit further back, the kind of core of your team a little bit? That's that's wild. That's wild to me. Yeah. Like, you would come in and do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, I wouldn't – that would not surprise me. All the players that I have talked to and have said nothing but glowingly good things about Matt Patricia. It's really weird. But then again, a lot of the players that are in the Lions system now, worked with him in New England, you know, and were brought in by him. So, you know, he's kind of gotten rid of all the, you know, Quandre Diggs and Darius Slay and some of the and Devon Kennard, some of the good players that they had to replace him with, mostly just Patriots guys. And it's kind of frustrating because it's it's really just not working out. But none of these guys will say anything otherwise.
Right.
The Detroit Patriots now, huh?
Yeah.
It's like
only without the win.
Right. And that's the problem, I think, that we've seen with almost every single Patriots coach that's left New England, is that this New England system only works if you're winning. Because it's not fun. The players don't enjoy it. The coach is usually a dick about it. Like, you know, they're not winning any popularity contests, and it's kind of like the anti-Dan Quinn approach, right? Like, Dan Quinn was way too friendly with the players. They need more of an in-between guy, but Patricia's kind of, like, gone the opposite direction, where he's just kind of a dick, and everyone wants to leave. Yeah. And, like, it's one thing if you're, you know, going to Super Bowls every year, because players will put up with a lot if they're going to the Super Bowl every year, but, yeah, it's crazy to me that... I don't know what Matt Patricia thinks he's done to think that he can go just be a dick to everyone on his football team when he's won like six games over the past couple seasons.
Hey, and I tell you what, how some of them players think, because I'm just kind of putting myself back in that mode. Like, you cannot be a dick and we're not winning and you don't have no playing experience. Because
if you're a dick, you're not going to stick around very long because no one's going to bat for you.
Right.
you know, I can't help but always think about this quote from a Sports Illustrated article that Robert Klemko wrote last year, where they were talking about some of the destinations that free agents like to look at or don't like to look at. Detroit was one of the ones that places didn't want to go, and they got a quote from an anonymous scout, and it said something to the effect of, like, players don't want to go play for Matt. I think I'm Bill Belichick, but I ain't done shit, Patricia.
Yep. That sounds about right. Yeah, yeah.
Said a lot.
It does, yeah. And it's, you know, it doesn't seem like things have gone as far off the rails there as, like, you know, Dallas, which, like, I mean, I could have told you not to hire Mike Nolan. Like, let's be real here. But I still can't believe that. I mean, like, who goes and hires the disgraced Falcons defensive coordinator? Like, fired Falcons offensive coordinators. Okay, like, they've had some good offenses. But, like, you don't fire the guy the Falcons fire on defense. Like, that is just – that just blows my mind. Like, you just I just don't get it. But –
hey, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Clearly. Nepotism is alive and well.
I hate to get too far into the weeds, but, like, I think that's the biggest problem with the NFL is that it's just a bunch of guys being reused in different stories, different teams. Instead of bringing in any new blood or trying something different, everybody just keeps reusing the same guys over and over again. It's a problem. I think it's really I think it's an issue within the league because it's keeping a lot of players or a lot of people from not getting hired because they just keep using the same guys over and over again.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's very disappointing. Like, you know, when you hear, like, Adam Gase has a job as a head coach and Eric Bieniemy is sitting on the bench, you know, in Kansas City. Like, it's just, it blows my mind. But
and Todd Bowles got fired, who is a pretty good defensive coach.
Right, exactly.
Something still tells me that someone's going to hire Adam Gase as their offensive coordinator next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Despite everything we've seen, you know, in Chicago and Miami and now the Jets, and somebody's going to say, you know what, we're going to bring him in here with our quarterback and he's going to turn things around.
Yeah,
yeah, it'll probably be Detroit.
Yeah. Look, he had that one year with Peyton Manning, okay, like, and that makes all the difference for folks. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me, and that's a real problem. And I hope, you know, that teams like the Falcons and maybe the Texans, I don't know, I don't want to get too bold here, but the Falcons at least have made it clear that, I think they've made it pretty clear that they're looking heavily at, you know, black head coaching candidates like Eric Bieniemy, like Raheem Morris. I mean, they made one, you know, they made Raheem Morris their interim head coach. So clearly they're not opposed to the idea. It's just, it's a trend that has been in this league for far too long. And, you know, somebody's got to actually do something and stop just talking about hiring head coaches and black head coaches and actually doing it, you know, like it. Right. So I hope Atlanta's, you know, the one to do that. Cause Eric Bieniemy seems like an awesome dude and an awesome candidate, but, we're super off the rails with that. But yeah, I mean, kind of, you know, merging things back to week 7, you know, how are you feeling going into this matchup? Is this, you think you, the, are you concerned at all about the Falcons, you know, seemingly getting it together last week, or do you think this is a team that Detroit should be pretty favored against?
I think it's going to be a battle of which team wants to lose more.
Yeah, that's fair. That's always fair.
And both these teams, have a penchant for getting out to leads and then losing them. So it's going to be really, I think it's going to be a very fun game. I think it's going to be a shootout personally. The thing that worries me the most obviously is look, it's Matt Ryan. It's Todd Gurley, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley. I mean, you guys are stacked when it comes to offensive weapons. The Lions aren't too bad either. They've got Kenny Golladay and, you know, TJ Hockenson, DeAndre Swift, you know, but they're not as tried and true and tested as you know, the Atlanta Falcons' weapons are. I think the Lions should be able to put up a lot of points on that defense, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to keep up with the Atlanta offense, especially if they play like they played against Minnesota last week.
Yeah, and that's the big question. You know, can the Falcons keep it together another week? You know, can they perform against a Lions defense that has been pretty hot and cold this year? You know, and can the Falcons defense look you know, have some life. Like, they had some life against Minnesota. You know, Minnesota certainly shot themselves in the foot. Kirk Cousins at least did that big time. But, you know, the strength of the Detroit offense has, I guess, been the run game. They've been leaning pretty heavily on Adrian Peterson. And now that DeAndre Swift's back healthy, he had a great game too. But
this game presents some matchup issues that we've seen already this season for the Falcons defense. You know, Kenny Golladay is a very, very good player. And if a guy like DK Metcalf gave this secondary trouble in week one, I can see a guy like Golladay being that same issue, being a big receiver that's still able to stress the field. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he leads the team in yards per catch. I think it's like 16, 17, something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So he presents that matchup issue. You know, you're either going to have him covered by a rookie in AJ Terrell, or you're going to have him covered by a guy that he is just, you know, just dwarfs in size and Kevin Sheffield. So it's a matchup issue. You know, is can Deion Jones, can he contend with a guy like TJ Hockenson, who's starting to come into his own as an athletic tight end going forward? We all know Stafford can throw. Mm-hmm. Stafford can launch it. I think this game presents some issues for that Falcons secondary in particular. It goes uncovered, but Cousins threw for 330.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Stafford can match that.
Yeah.
And probably exceed that in this particular game here. So.
Yeah, and he'll probably forego the interceptions as well. I mean,
you know, probably.
Yes. Probably. Cousins is he's garbage right now.
Yeah,
he's really bad.
He's playing in Minnesota right now, but Stafford is a different test.
Yeah,
much different test.
Yeah, and I have those same issues on the other, you know, on the Lions side of the ball with Jeff Okuda and Amani Arawarie. I going up against Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. I mean, that's a mismatch for sure. I don't know if either of those guys can keep up with, you know, with Julio or Calvin. And I think that's where the Falcons can really take advantage. Plus, you know, Todd Gurley presents a real issue in the run game for the Lions. You know, last week they had James Robinson, who I know everybody's kind of high on, but I don't think he's really done anything special this year. And Alvin Kamara just absolutely tore through this Lions defense the week prior to that. So I think Gurley presents maybe one of the bigger issues, especially, you know, in the time of possession game. If they just want to run all day, they could probably do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm starting Stafford in fantasy this week. So, you know, if that gives you any indication of my thought there.
Or holiday this week.
Yeah.
No, you should. You should for sure. Yeah. I mean, they're going to get points, no doubt about it. I at the end of the day, I just think Atlanta might get more. I think I might pick the Falcons in this game.
Which defense can make a play in the second half? That's probably going to be the winning team. Which defense can come up with a critical stop when it needs to? So. So this is definitely a test for me for a team that's coming off their first win of the season. Great, you beat a Minnesota team that has bad quarterback play. They're missing their best player. Now, how about this Detroit team? A tough Detroit team, well, at least on offense, a tough Detroit team that can pose some problems in the air. Can you fix it? And I think it is going to come down to time of possession, because Falcons put up 40 minutes this past week against the Vikings, and they're probably going to have to match that this week when it comes to time of possession, because I don't want Stafford on that field throwing the ball 30 times, 40 times.
Yeah,
they're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, and you certainly don't want them on the field last either.
Right, yeah. And it's like, I do expect the Falcons to play the run well. They've done that pretty well all season. You know, they held Alexander Mattison to just 24 yards last week. And that, he's not Dalvin Cook, but he's had success, you know.
He put up 121 against Seattle the week before.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is, you know, a Falcons run defense that is actually good and has been pretty consistently good this year. So they're going to force the Lions to try to pass probably more than they're used to. But is that a good thing for the Falcons? I don't know. Maybe I'm hoping that Patricia is, you know, very stubborn with trying to establish the run. And that causes some, you know, long down and distance. But we'll see. I mean, I think if the best thing for the Lions would probably be to just throw the ball as much as they can. because
it's not gonna happen.
Yeah,
you know, this is a do or die game again for Matt Patricia. Do you think the win over Jacksonville kind of gave him some leeway when it comes to job security, or is it still like if you lose to Atlanta, you might not make it back next week?
Yeah, I think he bought himself some time with that win over the Jags for sure. Again, you know, that rumor was going around that he was probably going to get fired had they lost that game. It's not too hard to believe. I've always thought if they were going to lose to the Jags and then lose to the Falcons, that would be what would ultimately do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, it's really hard. If the Falcons go out and just absolutely demolish the Lions, then I could totally see Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn gone the very next day. If they lose a close one, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
So you do believe that if they do go that route, that is going to be head coach GM fired or just?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these guys are a package deal. Bob Quinn, you know, had Jim Caldwell in his first year as GM. And, you know, you could tell that he already wanted Jim Caldwell gone, even though, you know, Caldwell was having success.
Yeah.
We always knew he wanted to bring his boy in. We always knew it was going to be Matt Patricia. So, yeah, these guys are going to go together. And if anything, you know, if anything, Patricia will finish out the year, but Quinn will be fired first because you want to start that GM search early, obviously, so you can be ready for the head coaching search in January.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens there. And, you know, we'll see what the Falcons do, because if they play like they did against Minnesota, you know, they probably have a pretty good chance this week. If they play like the first five games of the season, that'll be a different story. It's really been two pretty different teams we've seen. But yeah, I mean, going into the season, I think most Falcons fans circled this game as like being pretty winnable. No Falcons fans probably saw the team being, you know, 0-5 a week ago, but you know, it's a weird year. This team has definitely not played up to expectations, but
leaning Detroit.
What's that?
I'm leaning Detroit. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid yet.
Not yet. Yeah, you're not all the way in. Yeah.
But I trust Stafford a lot more than Kirk Cousins. Stafford's going to make a lot more. He's going to make better decisions when it comes to, you know, putting the ball in the air. I just don't see it. You know,
yeah.
I don't see beating Minnesota as, you know, a way of saying or provoking me of thinking like, hey, they can beat Detroit, because these are two different teams in my opinion.
Sure.
It's not that far off, but again, I can trust Matt Stafford. I can trust that offense. I can trust Galladay, but I just think they're going to be a different test this week. So I gotta go with Detroit this week, man. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, if the Lions play like they played last week, then they're going to win for sure. I just don't know. The biggest question for me is, was that Matt Patricia just throwing us a bone to just try the idea of not just playing man coverage all the time and not rushing the passer? Or is this something that he's going to continue to do?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's really hard. It's really hard to predict the Lions.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to predict the Falcons too. And it's like, this is probably a really tough situation for Matt Patricia, because like the Falcons are probably better than 1-5. Like, you know, if we had to actually say, like, they're probably a better team than like the Jaguars and a lot of these kind of bottom dwelling teams this year. But they're 1-5. So like, it looks really bad to lose to a 1-5 team like the Falcons, even though they're probably better than 1-5. So like, that could be, you know, just the excuse that the Detroit brass needs to be like, oh, you lost to the 1-5 Falcons. All right, that's it. We're done. You know, even though it might not be fair in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, I think anybody who thinks about the Falcons this year is going to think about that onside kick against Dallas, and they're going to just automatically think the Falcons are just an embarrassing team.
Yeah, I mean, that was very embarrassing. Yeah,
you're not going to avoid this reputation, man. It's going to follow them. It's going to stick to them like glue, dude. Just like the Bills.
That's
almost 30 years ago, but it still follows them as a franchise. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to go away.
Dang, it's not going to follow us around like that, is it?
Oh, yeah, man.
That one onside kick.
Follow that coaching regime, you know, the head coach. Dang, man.
Follow. Nope. When we hear Buffalo Bills, what do we think?
0-4
Super Bowls. Yeah.
I mean, look, 28-3 was terrible, but man, it wasn't four straight Super Bowls losing. So
still 28-3, man.
Yeah, I know, but I think I honestly prefer that to going to the Super Bowl four times and losing four times. Like
exactly, I'd rather get four cracks at a Super Bowl than to than a lose a 25-point.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to be a good one. I mean, I think this is actually a pretty evenly matched game. I haven't finished my stats breakdown of the game, but I mean, I suspect that this will be pretty evenly matched. These are two defenses that aren't great and two offenses that are playing pretty well. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it should be fun to figure it out. I don't know. I'm just nervous as always.
Yeah. I think like we stopped being nervous because it's like 0-5. It's like, all right, nothing else to play for. Let's just chill out. And you know, now they're probably going to do some like weird stuff, like go back to 500 and then collapse again. That's probably what they're going to do. But
are you guys tanking for Trevor Lawrence then? Or?
Well, there's no point because you're not going to get ahead of the Jets. So
no,
my thing, some of the fans are seeing that, you know, that one win over Minnesota, and some fans are already talking playoffs. I'm like, come on, man, like seriously. It's a good win, but talk to me if they get to 500. If they get to 500, then we can talk playoffs maybe, but not now. It's premature. Like, they're still a bad team.
Yeah. There's certainly a section of people like that in Detroit as well. And, you know, Lions, if they win this game, they're 500, and they're not too far off that seventh spot. But, man, we just cannot be talking about playoffs right now.
Playoffs?
There may not be an NFC East team to get in this
year.
Oh,
my gosh. The NFC least, yeah. At least we're not the NFC East, so.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
Yeah, but yeah, folks. Thank you guys all for tuning in. We got a little bit more content to get to tonight. Obviously, before we get to that, though, I want to remind you guys, if you don't mind, to throw a like at the show. We really appreciate that. And you'll notice there's a little Falcoholic logo in the bottom right. If you click that, that's an easy way to subscribe. You can also subscribe the normal way too. That'll give you guys notifications and such when we go live, and I will give you a shout out if you do it while the show's live. If you wait till the show's off the air, I can't give you the shout out. So, you know, you can do it now. I'll give you the shout out. So that's where we're at. I want to thank my wonderful guests as well. We'll give them a chance to plug their stuff here as we move forward. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, I guess normally this would be the time where I'd be like, okay, what's the implications of this game? I mean, at this point, is it basically just draft position for these teams, Mike, or do you think that there's still an outside shot for the Lions to be in the mix here?
You know, just looking at the schedule coming up for the Lions, they've got three teams that are 1-5 in their next six games. I think that the Lions feel at this point that they might be able to put a run together and make the playoffs. So that's I think that's the way that we're kind of looking at the Lions at the moment. I don't believe that's going to happen, but it's certainly a possibility that they could go on a little run here and come out of the next six games at 6-5 or 7-4 or something like that, and it just be this massive turnaround.
How the hell did that work out? Three teams 1-5 the next few weeks.
That's lucky. Yeah.
It's the luck of the draw, man. Let me quick look at the Lions schedule here.
That's fine.
Man, that's lucky. Goodness gracious.
That's a nice little stretch there.
Falcons could never have that type of luck.
No, well, okay, so they got the Vikings, and they got the Washington football team and the Houston Texans.
Oh, man. Yeah, so there's hope. There's hope indeed, especially if you pick up this win on Sunday, so.
There was every year for the Falcons to play like the Jets and Giants. This will be that year. But no, of course, they don't get that. They get the Chiefs and the Raiders. And yeah, this is awesome. This team is not going to win.
Well, don't get too happy for the Lions, because they got to finish off the year with the Packers, the Titans, and the Buccaneers. I mean, that's the season ruiners right there.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Last 3 weeks of the season for the Falcons is Bucks, Chiefs, Bucks.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. You know, something tells me Dirk Cutter's offense ain't going to look so hot against that Buccaneers defense. But
never know. Y'all might get lucky. Derrick Henry gets hurt. The Titans, you know, that offense ain't doing nothing without him.
Yeah, well, I hope he doesn't, because I have him in fantasy. And I
yeah, they got the competing interests there with that one. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all pretty convinced that the Falcons are kind of out of it. So it's draft position jockeying. You know, I think a lot of fans are kind of on the fence about if they want more wins or if they want the top draft pick. But like, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think we are kind of in the boat of like a 4-12 to 6-10 team. And, you know, I want them to play well. And I think that this will be one of those games where they probably look pretty good. So we'll see if that ends up in a win or not. But the best case scenario is that I think both teams play well. And it's injury free, and you know, we get through to next week, and things are still going pretty much in the same direction. But yeah, I mean, it's probably a more important game for the Lions because they could theoretically still be in contention. I guess anyone could be in this weird 7 playoff seed universe, but
right, where everyone's getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. But it'll be an interesting game. I think it's pretty evenly matched, like we said earlier, and. You know, these are two teams that have quite a bit of crossover in terms of players. You know, we're not going to get to see Trufant, but, you know, I know Georgia fans are going to be interested in watching DeAndre Swift and, you know, his NFL start here. Glad he's healthy now. Yeah. Yeah, and Stafford, of course, too. Yeah, so that...
Yeah. Oh, little fun fact. Sorry to interrupt. Fun fact. This is the first time Matthew Stafford has played in the state of Georgia since he played for the University of Georgia.
Oh, wow.
That's weird, right?
Yeah, that's pretty weird. It's crazy. Yeah. One of those just, you know, random stats that you always want. Yep.
So I have to look that up. When was the last time Detroit was on the road against
the last time the Lions played Atlanta on the road, it was in London.
Oh, that's right. Yep. So that makes sense.
A London game and
Mike Smith era, huh?
Yep.
Yep, Mike Smith.
The game before that was Matt Ryan's first game. I believe that was also the last time they played in Atlanta. Well, It was the London game, but before that, the last time they played in Atlanta was Matt Ryan's first game.
Maybe.
Yeah, Stafford wasn't here yet.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, I always forget that, like, Stafford's technically got drafted after Matt Ryan. They both seem like they've been around forever at this point, so.
And they're, like, best friends, too. It's
yeah, it is interesting. Yeah.
The London game.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that London game. That was
another
blow.
I could talk about it. I would love to talk about it.
Hey, that game was like the nail in the coffin for Mike Smith.
It was. It? Yeah, that was the end. That was the end for Mike Smith.
Blown lead. Here we go. Yep. Awesome.
Another blown lead. Yeah. Well, it's followed us. Maybe Dimitroff was the secret, right? Maybe now that we've gotten rid of Dimitroff, he was actually the catalyst for all the blown leads. Because getting rid of Mike Smith didn't seem to fix it. So. I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed on that one. But yeah, guys, before we get out of here, want to give our guests and co-hosts an opportunity to plug their stuff. Mike Payton is on Twitter at POD_Payton. Mike, anything that you guys are working on over there, anything that you're working on you want to plug?
Yeah, we started a new podcast this year that I'm hosting called Man Coverage. We interview a bunch of media members and some former players. This week we had Lomas Brown, former offensive tackle Lomas Brown, on the show. So even if you're not a Lions fan, it's a really fun listen. We mostly just profile the guest and just kind of talk about stories from the road or stories from playing the game. It's a fun show. So even if you're not a Lions fan, you'll still enjoy it.
Yeah.
Hey, Lomas is a cool individual. I met him one time when I was playing. I was young. He was with Tampa Bay at the time. He wasn't with Detroit anymore, but we kind of knew each other because Dennis McKnight, who used to play in Detroit, they knew each other, and Dennis coached me in college, and he told me to go up and speak to him afterwards. And you know, sometimes some guys, if their status is a little bit higher than yours, they can kind of big time you a little bit. No, that wasn't the case with Lomas. Lomas actually stayed with me out on the field, talked with me, shared a couple words, and he was real cool. So yeah, shout out to Lomas Brown, man. You know, he was real nice to me back when I wasn't nothing.
Total class act. Same with me. One of my first writing jobs was for our local newspaper, and I had to interview him for like a charity event. Couldn't have been nicer. I mean, one of the nicest guys I've ever had the pleasure of talking to in the NFL. So, great guy.
Yeah, guys, check that out for sure. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm gonna have to check it out myself. So, as Man Coverage, you said, was the name of the pod.
Yep, Man Coverage, it's on our Pride of Detroit podcast feed. Give it a shot, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me some feedback, too, if you want.
Yeah, we're going to check that out. Also with us, folks, Keenan Forney, he's at KForney65 on Twitter and at F65Performance on Instagram. Keenan, anything you want to let the people know about?
Yeah, I am getting ready to start back training kids. If you want some work, come holler at me. I say this every week, get out there and support football. Get out there and support high school, college. The reason why I say that is because this is the time of year where guys start getting sick. You know what I mean? Start catching different little illnesses in there. And I don't want to jinx it, but I just pray that football stays going. So, you know, go support these kids. I'm going to go watch my boy Lyndon Cooper down in Carrollton High School this weekend. They got their homecoming. So go Trojans.
Absolutely, guys. Yeah, check that out. And check out if you're, you know, if you're an offensive lineman looking to get better. I mean, I can't recommend anyone better than Keaton Forney. You know, the Falcons first rounders were going to this man. So, I mean, no offense, but you're probably not.
I got Chance Womack coming in a couple weeks, so big Chance.
Oh, hell yeah.
From the SWAT, former first rounder for Tennessee. He's coming to see me in about another week or so. So, all yeah, right. You know, I'm a God is good, man. Let's just
yeah,
say
man.
That.
Hell yeah, that's great. That's awesome to hear. Yeah. Chance Womack, you know, we got Chris Lindstrom in there. We got Caleb McGarry. Like, these, you look, no offense to you, but you're probably not as good as those guys. So, if you want to be maybe as good as those guys, hit Keenan up, man. He'll get you set up right. Also with us tonight, my co-host Eric Robinson. He's on Twitter at @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, anything that you're working on you want to let the people know about?
I'm definitely I got started tonight working on the preview for the upcoming matchup against the Lions, so be on the lookout for that by the end of the week. Also, I'm also starting on my second column in regards to the Falcons head coaching search, and this one is a under the radar offensive coordinator that you've heard his name tossed around here and there a little bit, but I think you'll know a lot more about him by season's end. So I'm working on that one. But also go on the Falcoholic site, check out my first column where I highlighted Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs head coach, and why he may be a candidate for the Falcons at the end of the year when it comes to hiring a new head coach.
All right, yeah, check that out, guys. It's a good piece. We got lots of good content on the site, of course, and you should check that out if you're looking for the written version. And I am Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter. I got stuff this week. I think earlier I had an article about Falcons finally playing up to their talent level. That was nice to see. And then I had a piece today about Foye Oluwokun as one of the top breakout players for the Falcons this year and how nice it has been to see him out there. But yeah, guys, we really appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate Mike for helping us out, for Keenan for coming on and providing that all valuable player perspective. Like I said, if you guys don't mind throwing a like at the video, we appreciate that. If you're not already subscribed, hit that up. We got lots of exciting new stuff. This is just kind of the preview of all the interactive stuff we got going. You know, I'm going to be rolling out more stuff for you guys to get into. Widgets that will work, I promise. it'll be clearer where to go. Like, if you want to give us money, I'm going to make sure it's easy to see where that is so that I got that particular bit of information. Thank you, chat, for that. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming down the pike. If you guys have ideas for things that you would like, you know, send that to us. You can send it to us on Twitter at Falcoholic Live. Also, the email for the show is falcoholiclive@gmail.com. If you got more lengthy stuff you want to get in there. So thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back on Sunday for the post game coverage, so hit us up then. That show's a lot of fun as well. Until then, guys, thank you again for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will see you guys on Sunday. Until then, have a good one, guys. Good night.